Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A Columbus City law that bans landlords from evicting tenants in retaliation for complaints went into effect this month. Advocates hope that the added protection will stem a problematic trend in Franklin County, which sees some 18,000 evictions a year, the most in Ohio. Coming up, we're going to hear from a Columbus tenant facing eviction for complaining about the conditions of her rental apartment or home. And Columbus Business First Tristan Navera has been covering the issue. He joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. It's good to be here.
An attorney with the Legal Aid Society of Columbus was quoted in the Columbus Dispatch saying that Columbus has had an anti-retaliation ordinance in its code, but the way it was written made it very hard to enforce it. What changed?
So the provisions that have gone into effect basically allow the city to determine, you know, where tenants are making good faith complaints. Basically, if a tenant is complaining, and they're going through kind of the proper channels that the condition of their home is not up to code, there's a lot more clear-cut way of saying, okay, this person is complaining and making an effort to, make people aware of their condition. So it's less kind of a gray area where it's not entirely clear, kind of the whole process.
Now, there wasn't any formal opposition to this, right?
Not very much. I mean, some of the landlords have had concerns about it, but as I understand it, the city has worked with some of the larger landlords on the issue.
Is it a larger landlord problem, or is it this more an issue with smaller landlords? Is there any sense about where this pops up most often?
So it's kind of been hard for the city to track. There have been a certain number, as the Legal Aid Society will say, of landlords where there have been continuous complaints, but it's not exactly clear, how many units each landlord owns in the city. They can certainly say, though, that there have been a certain number who have, a high proportion of evictions and complaints about evictions and retaliatory evictions to their names.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about tenant rights and the issue of retaliatory evictions in Columbus now. There's an anti-retaliation ordinance in the code. If you have a question or comment, my guest is Tristan Navera. He's a Columbus Business First reporter, has been covering the issue. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I said there's 18,000 evictions in Franklin County every year, plus or minus. What do we know? You said it's hard for the city to track. I'm wondering then, what inspired the city to double down on this particular issue of retaliatory evictions?
Well, it was a specific project of council member Jiza Page, who is joining the legislature, who is leaving the legislature to join the bench here this year as a judge. There's 18,000 is actually one of the higher numbers as far as cities across the country. It's kind of on par with New York City. And part of the problem is that as soon as someone files an eviction against a tenant, there essentially is a black mark on their record. It doesn't matter if the case is thrown out. It doesn't matter if it's decided that it's a totally unfounded claim or if, the tenant is fully within their legal rights. Essentially, what happens is that there is an eviction filing on their record. And so there's been some effort to push back on getting that mark on someone's record in the first place because it can't be removed. So this is kind of a first step towards saying if you are just filing this against someone as revenge, basically for them complaining about the condition of your housing, then we can punish you for that.
And so that black mark on their record, that affects their ability to what? Get more housing, get a job, all kinds of things?
Definitely housing. When you start talking about applying for a new housing anywhere, it's going to be one of the first things that landlords are going to check for. There are a decent number who will say just even with the filing on your record that you will you'll be denied or you could potentially, have to face stronger, fees. There are probably things of that nature that make it much harder to find stable long-term housing.
How long has this change to the law been in the works? Is it something that Councilmember Page, point taken, she's they're actually getting ready to replace her on city council. She's going to a common police bench. But how long has she been working on that?
So this has been something, at least the past year or so, the city has definitely kind of been re-looking at this law. There have been a number of experts who have kind of come and taken a look at Columbus's different disparities and pointed to the evictions code as one of the most severely lacking and in need of improvement. So I would say, you know, Mayor Ginther has also kind of made an issue of it the past couple of years, but eviction specifically, maybe about the year or so here.
What about the evictions code is problematic in Columbus? What else
well,
I should
you know,
say?
Another, there's the number of evictions. You know, so I mentioned 18,000 evictions are filed. Well, the actual number of set-outs, as in the actual number of people who leave their housing as a result of the filing, is proportionally is relatively high. I think it's about 7,000 to 8,000 people in total. So the problem is that very often these people who are being evicted are single women of color. They tend to be very focused in a certain set of neighborhoods, and it creates kind of a continual housing instability issue that kind of affects both their children and kind of prevents a lot of other things from falling into place that help them find, you know, it's kind of hard to find jobs and transportation and that sort of thing when your housing is constantly unstable.
Did Jaiza Page identify any other issues in the city code that warrants another look?
So they've definitely been kind of considering, as far as the incentives for developing new housing as to mixed income communities. Now, they recently put out a new policy basically for developers saying that if you build new housing in certain neighborhoods, you have to have a proportion of that housing be set aside for people living at 80 and 100% of the area median income. Both of those are kind of targeted towards certain neighborhoods where there are a lot of need for affordable housing units. Certain areas like the Short North, you know, it's essentially determined that the market there isn't needing incentives anymore. But places where developers are seeking public assistance, essentially, they're going to have to respond by maintaining some level of affordability.
Let's see. Let's go to some calls now. If you have a question or comment, my guest is Tristan Navera. He's Columbus Business First reporter. He's been covering the issue of code change to the city of a city statute that bans retaliatory evictions. Tom in Columbus, you're a landlord. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. Thanks.
Good. I've been a landlord since 2000. I own hundreds of units. And then since the year 2000, I've evicted a grand total of three people. That's three. Now, the reason being is that landlords do not want to evict anyone. We want our rent, and we want our rent on time. And in exchange, we want to maintain our units. So I think really the conversation has to be turned to, it's not that the landlords want to evict anybody. I've tried to work with people in the past and say, hey, get $25 here. I won't file, $50 there. It's never gone well, and that's when one of my three evictions happened. So what I've learned is that a lease is a contract. The rent's due on the 1st. If I don't have it by the 5th, I file a three-day notice. If I don't have something back to that three-day notice, I have to file an eviction. And he is correct. Eviction does not go away. I try to explain it to tenants all the time. So we do a lot of homework on the front end to try to make sure that people are employed with good jobs, have stable housing before we take them on. I've learned that the hard way. I want to say,
well,
go ahead.
No, I want to ask you, is an eviction, is the notice of eviction, even if it never goes through, is that a black mark in your book for a potential tenant?
I've taken on a tenant that had an eviction that went through.
Okay.
And I asked what the circumstances were. The circumstances were that this tenant lived in a unit that was basically run by a dirtbag.
Yeah.
And I confirmed this with other neighbors, okay, and he paid the rent, and he paid it into an escrow account.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of people don't understand. Pay the rent into an escrow account if there's a conflict, because then you've paid your rent. I verified that. I took them in. I'm okay with that. It's, mm-hmm. it's not a huge black mark. But if you think you're going to lie and you're not going to be figured out, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be honest.
Yeah, and then, it's interesting. I mean, then the issue of the retaliatory evictions. Do you know people who do that? I mean, do landlords talk to each other? Do you have other people who do that?
To be honest with you, okay, it's such a competitive industry that we would never share our secrets, right? We all want great tenants. That's what we want. And I've been lucky because I've had three bad tenants that have 18 years. That's a great streak.
Yeah, that is a great streak.
I know there's people. Yeah, and I'm not in the best of areas, okay? I'm not in Dublin. I'm in Linden.
Okay.
I'm in Milo Grogan. I'm in the Hilltop, okay? Those are challenging areas, but there are good people who want to live there and want a good home.
Okay. Tom, thanks so much for calling us. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thanks.
Take care. Tristan Navera, I mean, in covering this, I mean, Tom sounds like a nice guy who tries to take care of his properties mm-hmm. and obviously has a pretty good track record on evictions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do a lot of these retaliatory, I mean, I'm trying to get a handle on where these are most likely to occur or what kind of markers there are for these kinds of things. Do they tend to be with big-time landlords, small-time landlords? Is there any identifying, things about them?
No, you're right. It's frustrating how complicated and how kind of nuanced some of it is. As I understand, there hasn't necessarily been a lot of data about the kinds of landlords who are more likely to evict, but it's more of an issue of the process and how there can be a disconnect where some of the tenants don't necessarily know some of their rights, and some of the landlords maybe, maybe just a small minority of them are using evictions kind of to line up kicking out tenants that they don't like, It's as far as some of the data, the Legal Aid Society had a tenant assistance project, which was basically a volunteer program where they had some lawyers represent some of the potential people facing eviction at court, and found that tenants represented by their group, about 50% of them had some kind of legal defense that would prevent them from being evicted.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when tenants did not have legal representation, about 1.1% of the cases resulted in an outcome favorable to the tenant. So there's a pretty massive just lack of awareness about what the legal rights are when a person is facing an eviction. And more often than not, if that filing is posted on your door, you've got a 3-day notice, people will just leave. They will just move out. They will assume that they have no defense or no recourse. And then that eviction will go through, and maybe they weren't fully aware that that's going to stay on their record.
You know, that
it's going to follow them.
That 3-day notice, I was looking up, checking out, I don't think it's called rental.com or Rent Cafe blog, and they ranked Ohio as among the landlord-friendly states, and that notice of eviction is one of the reasons. A 3-day notice isn't much.
Yeah, absolutely. The city has definitely looked at some other states. New York is the big one that people have been looking at, in that there is much more time for a person to kind of get things together. I mean, the overall process for an eviction, from when you see that posting on your door to when you have to be in court, it can only be a matter of days. And when you're talking about a person facing an eviction tends to be low income and working in a job that doesn't have a lot of flexibility, it's hard to get everything together around that in a short period of time.
It's just easier just to leave.
Yeah.
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 Tristan Navera, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you very much.
Tristan Navera is a Columbus Business First reporter. He's been covering the issue of evictions in the city of Columbus, which last month enacted a new ordinance that bans retaliatory evictions. That is, evictions that are made against a tenant who has complained about the property, complained about the landlord. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, a Columbus City law that bans landlords from evicting tenants in retaliation for complaints went into effect this month. Advocates hope that the added protection will stem a problematic trend in Franklin County, which sees some 18,000 evictions a year, the most in Ohio. Now, that's filed evictions. As Tristan Navera of the Columbus Business First pointed out, actually, the numbers is closer to 7,000 or 8,000 that go through that are fully evicted. But that ranks right up there with New York City, which means that Columbus isn't doing, or something's wrong in Columbus. Coming up, we're going to hear about the case of Tanisha Wilkerson. It was reported in the Columbus Dispatch as exemplifying the need for the law. She'll be joining us in a little while. Joining us now is Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board, Michelle Heritage. Welcome back.
Hey, glad to be here.
I wanted to know, and we've talked about it before, but just this ripple effect of even just getting a notice of eviction. You only have 3 days to get your act together.
Yeah.
That would be hard for me. I can't imagine somebody who has transportation, childcare, work, and financial issues.
Absolutely. I think we really see this negative impact on folks that are struggling a little bit to begin with. Maybe they don't have high incomes. What we know in our community, for example, that rent has increased three times as fast as income is increasing in the community. And so we see this divergence, which then affects people's ability to pay and pay on time. And so if you've got a car repair, a medical bill, maybe it's just the beginning of school season and you've got to do school supplies and clothes. All those kinds of things can impact people who really might be in a fragile position to begin with.
And the as Tristan said, most people just walk away. They don't try to fight it. They don't pick up the phone and call legal aid or something like that.
That's right. And, you know, again, what's interesting is this is disproportionately impacting people who may not have the highest incomes. They tend to be the most vulnerable. They may be challenged with other things. And sometimes people will say things like, well, just put your rent in escrow. Well, that's assuming that you have a bank account. That's assuming that you know that escrow even exists. And frankly, I'm on the board of Legal Aid. I've had that process described to me about how to escrow your rent. It's no simple process.
Right, right, right.
It's not just, hey, go put your rent in escrow. And so, you know, we've got some challenges we need to deal with in terms of eviction in this community. This legislation is really a great first step. I think there's some other changes that are afoot in both at the court and in the community that will help us going forward.
Like what?
Well, for example, right now we're one of the only counties in the state of Ohio that allows landlords to evict with a deposition. So a landlord could go in and evict multiple clients at once with one fell swoop, and they do not have to appear. Other counties across the state don't allow this, and so it becomes easier to evict. We haven't done a really great job in having a lot of resources at the courts. We're just starting to do that now. We're starting to have legal aid and community mediation services and job and family services right down there at the court so that maybe they can help stop this eviction before it goes all the way through. This is really a lot of new things that have been going on just in the last year or so.
Is there a special court for evictions?
Yes.
Okay. So that helps at least.
Well, the eviction court is a very busy court.
Okay.
I think on average, someone gets evicted about every 2 to 3 minutes all the way through the day, every single day. And so having someone on site, for example, Legal Aid has a program where they're intervening right there on site. One of the reasons it's important to have the landlord present is how can you discuss mediation, coming to an agreement that would prevent the eviction if the person you're supposed to negotiate with isn't physically present. So that's why it's important that some of these other kinds of laws change. Frankly, Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, has done a really good job. And their attitude is that they want to prevent evictions at all costs. They want to make sure that an eviction is the last possible alternative in the strategy versus just, hey, you were late on your rent, you broke a contract. That's just too bad.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about a new Columbus law bans landlords from evicting tenants in retaliation for complaints. It went into effect this month, and the advocates hope that it will stem the problem in Franklin County So there's some 18,000 evictions a year, or at least evictions filed, notices filed. That's the most in Ohio. It ranks right up there with New York City. So it's way out of whack, way out of proportion with the number of residents in Ohio. The case of Tanisha Wilkerson was reported in the Columbus Dispatch as exemplifying the need for the law. And Tanisha Wilkerson joins us now. Welcome to the show.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it.
Tanisha, you complained to your landlord about moldy walls, which I figure is probably part of a litany of complaints you had. Moldy walls just don't spring up, you know, out of nowhere.
Yes,
but
ma'am.
You called code enforcement. You complained about it to your landlord. You called code enforcement. What happened next?
Me and my roommate, we had called city code enforcement on him. And then when he figured out that we called him, he sent us a text message asking us if we called the city code on them. We told him yes. He told us since we did that, he was going to terminate our lease because we was on a month-to-month lease.
He told you, did you call city? You said yes. Okay, I'm going to evict you.
Yes.
Okay.
He said, I'm going to terminate you guys' lease. I had a right to do that. And then 4 days after that, he was putting 3-day eviction notices on my door, sending it through the mail. So on November the 1st, I had sent him a text message and asked him if he wanted to come pick up my rent. On November the 3rd, he refused. So I put my rent into rent escrow and contacted legal aid.
How did you know to put it into escrow? Because Michelle Heritage mentions, and I wouldn't think of it either. What's going on in your mind this whole time?
Well, a lot. First off, I guess I've been, Columbus, Ohio is a breeding place for some landlords. So friends that I know have been down the process with them and just living in the inner city and dealing with different breeds of people, I know immediately to contact some type of law enforcement.
Okay.
So, and Ben Espy, the city code enforcement officer, he also advised me to contact legal aid.
Okay. And then you put your rent into escrow and you're still in your home.
Yes.
In the same house.
Yes. Well, we just went to mediation on the 4th, this past Friday.
Okay.
So our landlord has to pay us the cost of our moving fees and give us a recommendation to another landlord so that we can move out and not have anything on our record.
Yeah, because that eviction, even the notice of eviction, is a black mark, right?
Yes. And here in Columbus, Ohio, oh gosh, I've been through so much that, oh, I can give you a list of stories. We can be on the air all day long.
Yeah, Columbus is rough. It's a rough place to try to rent. And it seems weird to me because it's prosperous. It's a prosperous city. Michelle?
Well, it is prosperous, but not all boats are rising with that tide.
Right.
What we're seeing is because of that prosperity, rents have increased. Over the last 5 years, we've seen a 38% increase in rent.
That is disproportionate to the raise for any increases in pay.
Yes, absolutely. And so you've got a disparity that is continuing to occur. In addition, because just like all the folks in this room, we want to live in Columbus, people are coming here. They're saying 1 million more people by 2050. And so the rental market is becoming basically completely, every single unit has got a tenant in it, super, super competitive. So if you've got anything going on, you can get evicted very quickly. I did hear Tom call earlier and he said, hey, landlords don't want to evict people. And I would say that's true of the good landlords. Sometimes we're not talking about the good landlords. I bet Tom has good apartments that he maintains well and keeps well. But there are landlords in this community, and this particular piece of legislation is going to get at making them clean up their acts, that they're going to have people in habitable conditions, not moldy walls, not bugs and rats and things like that. We've got landlords that are running substandard properties in this community, and they need to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Well, and also there's a lot of other factors that go into it. It's hard to find suitable housing in Columbus, Ohio. And then with the way that the rent is set up, if you don't have the proper income, three or four times the amount of rent, or if you can't pass...
For the down payment, you mean?
Yeah, for the down payment. When you go to put in the application, they require nowadays that you have three times the rent. Then you get into people's legal backgrounds, because a lot of places do criminal background checks.
Right.
So there's a lot of factors that go into looking for suitable housing here in Columbus, Ohio. And some people is more fortunate than others to find housing. For me, my story is a little bit different. And, oh, gosh, how can I put it? Oh, I've been through so much with landlords because of my background. So I was locked up. I did 10 years, well, almost 10 years, 8.5 years. And I came home. I was on papers, and I tried to find housing. And I got turned down, not because of my income, but because of my criminal. So then I finally found one landlord that said, you know what, Ms. Wilkerson, you seem like a pretty decent young lady, and your case happened when you was 19 years old. I'm going to rent to you. I was with that lady for 7 years, and then I just outgrown it because it was a two-bedroom. Mm-hmm. But the landlords that I came across was very ignorant, for a better lack of words. Mm-hmm. And even though I had the income, I had everything, because of my background, they didn't want to rent to me.
Even after you'd been with somebody for 7 years?
Yes.
Wow. I mean,
yes.
The check in the box thing, we talk about it in terms of employment, but it's also an issue, Michelle Heritage, then with just where you want to live.
Absolutely. You know, anybody who's got a challenge in their background, like Tanisha's talking about, she had a challenge in her background, that stays on their record. If they've had an eviction, a conviction, credit problems, you name it. And, you know, many landlords, as we're talking about, they want your income to be three times the amount of your rent. Sometimes they
it's hard.
That's a lot.
And understanding, and I don't want to bash landlords. We mm-hmm. have some really, really excellent landlords, and I'd like to call out the Apartment Association and say they have just been absolutely excellent
to
work with.
They were advocates of this change to the city law.
Because they want good landlords, and they really work with their landlords for best practices. We're talking about landlords that this legislation is going to affect that are C and D type of properties that need to get cleaned up. And the Apartment Association is just as interested in having high-quality units. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing I'm real concerned about, I will say, is in general, we are getting a larger and larger gap in the amount of affordable housing in this community. Mm-hmm. It's becoming harder and harder for someone who isn't making a lot of money to be able to rent. In fact, if you're just making minimum wage, you're going to work about 88 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, and hope nothing ever happens to be able to afford your rent. Otherwise, you get in an unstable situation where the amount of rent you're paying is much higher as a percentage of your income, and you get people who are housing unstable. The other thing that we find interesting is we did a data match to take a look at the places where people were evicted from,
uh-huh.
the zip codes, and the places where people are coming into our homeless shelters, and those line right up. And so you're seeing those zip codes that people are the highest number of evictions are also the highest number of homeless.
I think the point being there, one of the points there is that this isn't just an issue for the people who are being evicted. It's an issue for everybody. It's a community-wide issue.
Absolutely. This community has such an opportunity. We are on the precipice of just incredible economic growth, people coming to our community. We have so many great things going on. But there is no doubt what will happen in our future. There's no crystal ball needed. We can point to communities all across the country. If we don't build more affordable housing in an aggressive, strategic way, we are going to get in a situation like many other communities. Austin, San Francisco, Seattle, I could go on.
Well, I just want to turn to Alan in Clintonville real quickly. Alan, you're a landlord, and I welcome you to the show.
Yep, been a landlord for 30 years. A couple of things. 90 to 95% of the evictions are because the tenants don't pay. now. The other thing
is that just your experience, Alan?
Yeah, from being down at court.
Okay.
You know, I've been evicted, you know, a number of tenants over the years. And I know a lot of investors, too, that they would say the same thing. So now the scum landlord, yeah, there's scum landlords out there. The tenant, if they're on the putting stuff in escrow, the tenant, if they have paid on time, can put their money in escrow to get the landlord to fix stuff. That's the standard. But if they haven't paid their money on time and they just want to postpone the eviction, they won't be able to put their money in escrow. The three-day notice is something that I use it to wake up the tenant to get me their rent. And then I usually wait. I have to wait at least 3 days, and then I can go down to the courthouse and I can schedule an eviction in 2 weeks. But the biggest thing is that 90 to 95% of the evictions are not because the landlord's not fixing stuff. It's because the tenants don't pay, and we need to get tenants to pay.
Okay, so, Alan, I just want to make clear, you're speaking for yourself.
I'm speaking for myself with 30 years' experience.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. And I really appreciate you calling in. One of the things that Tom, the other landlord who called in earlier, Alan, said that he did was he did a lot of front end work on making sure that it was a good fit with his tenants, that he looked beyond maybe just what their record was on the face of it and went in deeper and just made sure of a lot of things. How much time do you invest in that upfront consideration of tenants? Alan?
Most importantly, I check the current and past landlord. I don't want a tenant that hasn't paid their current and past landlord, and the only reason they've got a deposit is because they didn't pay last month's rent.
Okay.
So I rely a lot on that kind of feedback.
Okay.
I really don't care about credit score, you know, even though I run the credit report. Any tenant, if they had a good credit, they would buy. They wouldn't rent.
Michelle Heritage?
So I hear what Alan's saying, and I think he's probably right. Most folks are evicted because they can't pay. The legislation we're talking about is really going to get at those landlords that are making people leave and they're not keeping their property up to code and their property really needs repair and needs to be taken care of. As a community, though, we have to think about what about those people who can't pay rent? And we can't just say, hey, you just got to make them pay their rent. I think what we need to do is to think about how do we help, especially folks that may be in fragile economic positions, stay stably housed? Because the alternative is to come to a homeless shelter. And we sure as heck don't want that to be the answer. We really have to think about it in a preventative way. And one of the things that we're doing that we're part of at Community Shelter Board as part of a collaborative called the Prevention, we're preventing homelessness for families, is we're working with several apartment units to see about could we do eviction prevention. And what that means is we're working with landlords that somebody hasn't paid, somebody's in a three-day notice cycle. We've got about 8 days to get to a tenant, talk to them, find out what's going on, and see what they need. And usually they need a little influx of cash, and it's usually not a huge amount, and they need a little bit of help with how to navigate specific kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And usually it's something like, I had a car repair. I had to pay a medical bill. It was the beginning of school, and I had to buy the school clothes and the shoes. When you are really paying a high percentage of your income for your rent, mm-hmm. any other thing that happens in your environment, it really gets to be a problem. And frankly, what we find with folks, especially who are living really close to poverty, is that the networks of people they have also are living right. in poverty. So there's no one to just go to and get the money from.
You're not a rich auntie anywhere.
No, but so, as a community, yeah, we've got right. to think about how do we keep folks stably housed? We've got to have more affordable housing, and we've got to have more programs where we're really looking at preventing eviction as our number one goal.
Yeah. And Tanisha Wilkerson, I'll let you have the last word for this segment. Go ahead.
Real quick. Now, when you talk about evictions, there is two parts. There is the part I have conflicting views as far as the people that don't pay their rent on time. Because I live in a lending community, and I come across people all the time that don't pay their rent. And there is good situations, and then some people just choose not to pay their rent because they want to be out here doing other things with their money.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this bill go that it just been passed, I feel very strongly about that because I feel like if the landlords take more responsibility on keeping up their properties, then that will allow the tenants to feel more comfortable in putting money into their properties so that they can obtain a good living situation. Mm-hmm. And that was my case.
Gotcha.
Because I like to put money into my home. If I come home and I work every day, I want my home to look nice. But if I don't have a landlord that's willing to put the money in to fix it up, why should I be responsible for fixing it up? And at the end of the day, all people is asking for in my situation is just for good living conditions. Because
mm-hmm.
being where I come from and being that I come from the lending community, your living situation plays a good part in your mentality. And if you living in a good home, you're going to be more aware to try to do better for yourself because it's going to promote you to want to do better for mm-hmm. yourself, to want to get out there and get a better paying job and be able to put nicer things in your home. But if your home is not up to par, then you're not going to want to put that money into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the situation in case for me. But as far as people don't want to pay their rent, if you don't want to pay your rent, that's
a whole nother story.
Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
Well, Tanisha Wilkerson, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time to tell us your story.
No problem. I appreciate you guys having me here.
Tanisha Wilkerson, she's a Columbus resident. She's involved in an ongoing legal dispute with her landlord. He's not taking care of the property, she says. She's put her rent into escrow in the meantime. We'll keep you posted on that. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the city of Columbus and how it protects tenants from scrupulous landlords and what the ripple effect is for unwarranted evictions. Even eviction notices can put a black mark on somebody's record and affect their ability to rent in the future. City Council in December voted to ban landlords from evicting tenants in retaliation for complaints. But housing advocates say that's just a start in chipping away at the high rate of evictions in Franklin County. About 18,000 a year are filed, the most of any county in the state. About 6,000 or 7,000 of those actually go through. It's very high. It ranks right up there with New York City. Not good. Still with us is Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board, Michelle Heritage. Joining us by phone is Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Apartment Association, Greg Brown. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Ann.
Are the issues the same across the country, this high demand and low stock of affordable housing?
Absolutely. The housing affordability crisis, as we characterize it, is prevalent everywhere, and it is driven primarily by the lack of supply and the overwhelming demand for rental housing.
In Ohio, when I looked up Rent Cafe blog, they ranked Ohio as among the landlord-friendly states. Coming from that, the owner point of view, what makes for a landlord-friendly state?
Well, it's hard to characterize. Every state is different. You know, every state goes through a different process for establishing those laws. I think, you know, from our perspective, what you're always trying to seek is the right balance in serving both the resident and the landlord in whatever state landlord-tenant law that you create. And there's actually a national process that goes on to create models for states to adopt in this area. So you're always trying to find that right balance between what landlords need and what residents need.
And what state do you think strikes, or is there an example of a state that strikes that balance, you know, from where you sit?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. I will say, though, that national process, which is the Uniform Landlord-Tenant Act, is a very balanced process in that it brings stakeholders from all over the country, including residents and resident advocates and landlords. And that is the most balanced process because you're taking in all perspectives from around the country, and what you come up with is a model that hopefully can help states get to the right place. I'm sorry, I can't think of a state off the top of my head right now that really has that balance, though.
You know, Michelle Heritage, I suppose a lot of people think that you, when you get together with your counterparts across the country, you talk about housing for people in homeless shelters. It's much more complicated than that. You're talking about these kind of issues all the time, right?
Absolutely. These are really important issues because here's the thing. Homelessness is solved by housing. It is primarily a housing issue. And in fact, many new studies have just come out that show, Seattle specifically, for example, that lack of affordable housing is a direct cause of homelessness. And so we're really concerned about how do we get people out of shelter quickly and into safe, stable housing. We want homelessness to be prevented whenever possible, and preventing evictions is the first step in that. And then if someone does become homeless, they have to get rehoused very quickly. We're really not a homeless system. We're a rehousing system. And so when there's not a stock of affordable, safe, decent units in the community, we see a really bad kinds of data that come through, really bad effect. For example, our families are staying in shelter twice as long now as they used to. We have the highest number of families in shelter that we have ever seen in the recorded data of Community Shelter Board. And what that means is that families are getting stuck. It's taking our partner agencies twice as long to find a safe, decent unit. And so that is a definite ripple effect. You know, I keep saying to everybody, we're the canary in the coal mine here at Community Shelter Board. Mm-hmm. We can show you the negative impact of not having enough safe, decent housing.
You know, Greg Brown, when we did a real estate show recently, the point was made that emphatically that the cost to build affordable housing, it's too expensive to build affordable housing. In other words, you can't build it and charge affordable rates to pay the bills for building it.
Well, it certainly is. It's difficult in many markets. It's difficult to build any, you know, not only affordable housing, especially if you're talking about, when you say affordable, you're talking about someone at 30% of area median income or 50% of area median income.
Yeah.
But realistically, it's even hard to build housing at 60 to 100% of median income, sort of that the meaty middle, your firefighters, nurses, teachers, et cetera. And that's driven by a lot of factors. But, you know, our message is, and we say this to local officials all over the country, is that you have to streamline that local development process. You have to remove those barriers to creating that new supply so that you can take the pressure off the rents, take the pressure off the supply imbalance that you have, and that provides obviously more available housing. So yes, it is quite difficult, especially in your urban areas, to build housing that is affordable across the spectrum, not just at the very low income end.
And we heard from a landlord early on in the program who said that he's been working in the business and renting for about 18 years now, and he does a lot of front-end work, and he doesn't just check the boxes and eliminate people based on a criminal record or previous evictions and that kind of a thing. He does the legwork and tries to figure out if they'd make a good tenant. Is there a best practices for the National Apartment Association when it comes to screening people for that?
Well, not necessarily a best practice, like a prescribed, this is the pathway you must follow, because every owner is different, every situation is different. But I can say with full confidence that every owner's goal is to find residents that can fulfill the terms of the lease, maintain the lease, stay in their home, because the worst-case scenario for any owner is an eviction. It's incredibly expensive. It's disruptive to the residents, disruptive to the community. And so that front end work is specifically to prevent evictions from occurring. Now, they have to happen, and they do happen, of course, as you've been discussing all morning. But our members and members all over the country are screening to try to prevent those evictions from happening. And in actuality, many of them now have programs to even prevent those evictions when they come up. If they can mitigate an eviction, that's even better. So keeping the residents in their home and preventing that disruption.
Hmm. Ann in Grove City, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Am I coming through all right?
Yep, you're on. Yep.
All right. This was in the first decade of the 2000s mm-hmm. in Grove City, Ohio. And I can't even remember the landlord. But at the time, I was in a wheelchair. I had had a back injury. And I had a service dog that was legally trained in Greenville, Ohio, for a year and a half. And she was illegal. She wasn't one of these dogs that people say, oh, she's a service dog.
Right. She was the real deal. Okay.
Yeah. She was very well behaved. She did everything for me. Mm-hmm. I could say, go get my shoes, and she'd go get them. I mean, she was so incredibly smart. Anything I pointed to on the floor and said, get it, she got it and handed it to me. I had her for 13 years.
Well, okay, Ann. We're running out of time. I don't mean to rush you, but, go ahead.
I was solid middle class at the time. Mm-hmm. I moved into an apartment where there was a rule that you could have a little dog, but you couldn't have any dog over 30 pounds.
Uh-huh.
She was a service dog, and it was 4 units front and 4 units in the back. That's all.
Okay.
And the lady in the back on the far side kept complaining about my dog. Now, I always picked up all the
mm-hmm. And I do not want to rush you at all, but I think your story is a little more long. We're really running out of time. We only have about 30 seconds.
She evicted me.
She evicted you.
I got a
letter
of eviction. She would never give me a reason. I heard from another resident that she wanted to put a relative in there, and I was the newest one.
Okay. So first, last in, first out. And thanks a lot for your call. I'm sorry that it's maybe not something we can necessarily address right at this point, but disability rights are another issue, are they not, Michelle Heritage? Is there a disproportionate number of people?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what we find is people who have disabling conditions also tend to live in poverty. And not everyone who's disabled lives in poverty, but having a disability or disabling condition is a risk factor for people not being able to earn enough money to support themselves. And even when folks are on SSI or SSDI, they've got some sort of, benefit that's coming in. Those numbers, that's $700+, and the average rent for a two-bedroom in this community right now is over $1,000. Mm.
Michelle Heritage, Executive Director of the Community Shelter Board, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
Also, Greg Brown, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Apartment Association, thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Ann. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.